Now, back to
Dillard and Wibbs
on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No, Willard, it's Dibs and Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. We just caught up with Tim Kawakami. If you missed it, download the free Odyssey app, subscribe to Willard and Dibs. You'll be able to find it there in podcast form. You can also use our rewind feature and go back and listen to the interview that way. While you're there on the free Odyssey app, you can also check out what both the Morning Roast and Steiny and Goo had to say about the start of Niners training camp. Practice number two today. We've been talking a lot, Dibs, and this was a lot of what TK was talking about as well. The importance of steps forward for the defensive side of the ball and steps forward for some of the youngsters, but also just the rookie starting at a relatively high level, because that was the side of the ball that did the Niners in last year. Even if you just get that side of the ball back to average and the offense stays a top five offense in terms of yards per play, like they have been year after year after year under Kyle Shanahan, you have an elite offense and an average defense, that's a playoff team, bottom line.
Especially with the schedule, and yeah. I'm glad that Tim said it, because I've been saying it for so long that it feels like it's something that I'm leaning on too much. But
he said Tim, easiest schedule ever, right?
That he's ever seen. And he's not wrong, and just looking at the actual numbers as I ran through them, their winning percentage of their opponents was 415 last year. And as we know, it doesn't mean that that will be the same this year. Last year, their schedule had a previous year record of 505, and it wound up being 578.
That's a gigantic jump.
It's a huge jump. And it's funny you say that, because I went through and ran the last five Super Bowl champs and what their record of their opponents was going in and what the record eventually was coming out.
So like the Super Bowl, the eventual Super Bowl champs going into that year.
So last year, Philadelphia, their opponents had a previous year winning percentage of 491.
Okay.
So the teams that Philadelphia was going to face the previous year, they had a winning percentage of 491. At the end of the year last year, those teams had a winning percentage of 430.
Wow.
So they were, 6 points worse than what they were the previous year.
A somewhat difficult schedule became pretty darn easy.
A cakewalk, yeah.
Yeah.
And a schedule of a 491, so the teams the previous year were five games below 500 collectively.
Yeah.
And then you look at who they faced, and it was New Orleans 5-12, Cleveland and the Giants both 3-14, and they got the Giants twice.
Of course, yeah.
Dallas 7-10, they got them twice. Carolina was 5-12, and so you go through their schedule, a 4-13 Jacksonville team, and you're seeing a little bit of a pattern here where they were taking on the NFC South and the AFC South. And so when you start to go through the Niners schedule this year, of all the teams they're going to face, how many of them are you looking at and thinking, well, they're going to be a lot better than last year? Like Chicago is a team that everybody's thinking.
That's one that comes to mind for me.
Right. So Chicago, they're going to be a lot better than what they were last year. Okay. And Arizona, Seattle, and the Rams are all going to be tough games, and they're all going to be good. I think the Rams are really good. Seattle is good-ish, and Arizona, you just never know, depending on that quarterback. But you always have trouble with Arizona, at least one of the times. But like the Giants and Carolina and New Orleans. And the Giants, all these other opponents you have, I don't think that you would look at them and think, man, they actually will be better than what their record was last year.
New Orleans might be one of the worst football teams ever. Like, they're going to be so bad, and the Niners have them early in the year, which, they're going to be even worse early in the year than they will be late in the year.
Yeah, one of the worst teams that I can remember is the 49ers. Chip Kelly, they went 2-14, and I'm looking at it here. They had a minus 171 point differential. It's a team that gave up a clean 480 over 16 games, which is, that's 30-something a game.
My God.
And they were 32nd in points allowed, 32nd in yards allowed, and 31st in yards gained. So you had an almost worse in the league offense, you had the worst defense, and you had a roster that was an absolute abomination. So, yeah, that's a rebuild. When you're 2-14, and apologies to Colin Kaepernick, who was the quarterback, and he had to author that mess, but the coaching staff was a mess. the offense, the defense, it was all bad. So this year, coming off a 6-11, you're not that by any stretch. Not even close to that.
I'm making fun of New Orleans. Maybe the only team that can challenge them in terms of how bad they are this year might be the Cleveland Browns. I'll lock this in. New Orleans and Cleveland, Dibs, in some order, they'll be picking 1 and 2 in next year's NFL draft.
Kukush?
New Orleans and Cleveland. Lock it up.
There it is.
In some order, 1 and 2 in next year's NFL draft.
And you have them both on your schedule.
They're both on the Niners' schedule.
There you go.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that gives you an idea of just how bad the schedule is. And as I mentioned, the winning percentage of their opponents last year was 415. And, you know, you go through some of the teams that actually go on to win the Super Bowl. 2022, Kansas City, the teams they eventually played had a winning percentage of 429. And that was, they went 14-3, but they played all these teams with losing records.
Yeah.
So teams that were bad went on to be bad. They went on to be worse than what the previous record would indicate. So, you know, a lot of it depends on which team bounces back, but looking across the Niners' schedule, I don't look at a lot of candidates of, well, yeah, I mean, that team was way better last year than their record. They're going to be good this year. You don't have a lot of those teams on there.
No. Let me ask you this, and I think I might have threw this out towards Evan yesterday, because just like you, I was a little frustrated with some of the things that Evan was saying. If you do have any level of, I don't know, confidence in the Niners, that they'll at least be better than last year, and that this is not a rebuild, and they're at least going to be competitive and fighting for a playoff spot. Is your confidence in that, whatever it is, but is your confidence in that more because of the schedule or because of who you think the Niners actually are? Because if you think it's just the schedule, and this is, quote, you know, was what Tim Kawakami said, and I know you feel very similarly, Dibs, this is the easiest schedule I've ever seen. Is your confidence coming from that and that alone, or is it who the Niners are? Because for me, obviously, the schedule helps, but I do have a belief that the Niners are, I mean, one of the five best teams in the NFC. I believe that with all my heart.
I believe that they are one of the, let's just say, 16 best teams in football to start there.
Top half is what you're saying.
So, and as we know now, you get 7 in each conference that go to the playoffs. So the bar to actually make the playoffs is not as high as it used to be, and I did a full deep dive on every Super Bowl matchup ever. I wanted to see what percentage of number one seeds actually make it to the Super Bowl. And as I was going back in time, you get back into like the 70s, the early 70s, the mid 70s, when there were only 4 playoff teams.
Huh.
And there was 4 from each conference after the merger. And now we get 7 from each conference. So you get 14 of the 32 who actually go to the playoffs. So can the Niners be one of the 7 best in the NFC? That's where you start for me as far as, is it a rebuild? Are they a threat? And when you look at the NFC, I think it's very easy to think that if 7 teams make it, they are among the, I don't know, 9 teams that have a chance. And we can go through and tick off the no-chance teams, and you get to New York for me is a no-chancer.
Yeah, let me bring them up here.
Carolina's a no-chancer. New Orleans is a no-chancer.
So, sorry, Giants, Carolina, New Orleans.
That's a clean 3.
Yep.
Right there to start. So now you're down to 13 teams for 7 spots. And, you know, I probably would put Dallas in there too. Not as a no-chancer, but are you better than Dallas? Yes.
Yeah, then you start getting to the groups of teams where you're like, well, maybe, but probably not. And in there is Dallas.
Yep.
In there is Atlanta.
Chicago,
Arizona,
right?
Maybe Seattle.
Okay.
And that's like kind of the middle group. And then you have, as you laid out, the teams that actually feel like they have they would feel like missing the playoffs is a failure. The next group, which includes the Niners.
Exactly. And if you want to look at the teams that you would expect to make it, you would go with Philadelphia,
Detroit.
In Green Bay, I think you could say. I mean,
yeah.
Philadelphia, Green Bay, Detroit, and then for me, you get to that next group, which would be the Rams and the Niners. The Vikings are a little bit of a head scratcher because we don't know about the quarterback.
Yeah, I'm staying away from the Vikings.
I would put Tampa, though, in that next group just because they're in a division where they should win that division, and I'd put Washington in that group as well. So if there's 3 teams that you would look at and say, oh, yeah, you should, like, you're a should, and then you get into the next five that are could or probably would. That's where the Niners are.
I might even include Green Bay in that one. I think there's a clear two, Philly and Detroit, although Detroit might not be nearly as good as they were last year. They lost their entire coaching staff other than their head coach.
A lot of brain drain.
We'll see how that plays out. Now, they're still incredibly talented, and you expect them to still be good, and they should probably win the NFC North still. They should make the playoffs, no doubt, but it's Philly and it's Detroit, and then I think you have a lot of teams, and the Niners are in that group of, probably. They should. If they don't, then they'll be upset. And then you've got the reaches, and then you got the no chances.
Exactly. And barring, obviously, injuries and calamities is what you always have to couch this with. But that's why I look at, what Evan was saying, where, you're closer to a rebuild than you are to actually going on a run. And I think you shared with our group earlier that Steiny was on the fence, and that kind of cracked me up.
I was listening, and it took him like 7 minutes to come to any sort of conclusion.
That's my guy.
He was just like, I think it's 50-50.
I see both sides. And that's great. He's a very measured and responsible man when it comes to his opinion. But I look at this Niner team and put aside the schedule. And to answer your question, is it the Niner team or is it the schedule? Yeah, which one of those, right?
888-957-9570. And you're picking the team?
For me, it's more the team. And it's not like, 100% the team. I don't care who they play. And it's not 100% the schedule, which is a joke. Tim Kawakami called it the easiest schedule he's ever seen. I would put it about two-thirds, one-third, because I do believe in the roster. I believe in the quarterback. I believe in the running back, the left tackle. I think that your tight end is also still really, really good. And the way Shanahan schemes up his offense, I think, fits what the roster looks like for the most part. And then on defense, a little bit more of a question mark, but the fact that Saleh is back, I do believe, is going to help that defense a ton to be better than last year, which was a flat, bad defense.
It was. You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries. Always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. The schedule does not hurt by any stretch of the imagination, and of course it helps. And I was looking at this earlier. Each of the last handful of times, I have to go back and confirm exactly the number of times. I think each of the last three times, Dibs, the Niners had a last place schedule on their hands, they went at least to the NFC Championship game. So oftentimes, the easy schedule has set them up for success, and then the team that got to the postseason, maybe partially on back of an easy schedule, they actually turned out to be a really, really good football team. The last time it happened was when they lost to the Rams in the NFC Championship game. That was actually more of a tough year because they barely made the playoffs. They had to win each of their last two games to make the playoffs, and they did it by coming back from double-digit deficit versus the Rams the final week of the year just to make the playoffs. But that was a last-place schedule. And they kind of had this, Dibs, where they're kind of on for a couple of years, and they have deep runs. Then they just have an injury-plagued year, and they suck, and they get a last-place schedule, and then they repeat that. And that's kind of been their process. So they do have these really rough years followed by easy schedules interspersed throughout their run under Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch. So there's no doubt that it helps, but I'm just belief in the team and who the team is. And it's something that Mad Dog said, and we heard it earlier, what he said on First Take today. If you believe in Brock, if you believe in Kyle, and if you believe in John Lynch, which I do to varying levels, I suppose, and not that any of them are perfect, but those are the backbones of a quality franchise and a quality team. And I think the Niners have all three of those checked off.
They do, and that's most important when you get into a season where you do happen to have a schedule that maybe not as rugged as previous years. And health, of course, trumps everything, but I do think that one factor that we overlook a lot is the continuity of it. And now you've got Shanahan in year 9 and Lynch in year 9, and you've got a quarterback who's been here for a while, and you've got a system that's been in place. And so when you get into camp like this week, you're not starting at square one anymore because you've got a number of players who've been in this system with the terminology and with the playbook. And you always have to bring in and get the new guys up to speed, but it's not as hard when your play caller and your quarterback have already been here for a long time. You've got extra voices to help coach the other people.
Yeah, and you get Saleh back, which I know he hasn't been the DC for you for the last handful of years, but that's that in and of itself is also some continuity because Shanahan has his guy back, and it's nothing that we didn't have the time to ask Tim Kawakami about this, but one thing that Shanahan told Tim Kawakami on the TK show earlier this week, and I found this really interesting, was having Robert Saleh back and what that means to him. And Tim essentially asked, this time around, considering that he was your DC, left to become a head coach, now comes back as your DC, are you able to give him more responsibility and trust him with more? And Shanahan essentially said, well, all of my assistant coaches, no matter who they are, they kind of have, you know, full responsibility and autonomy over their jobs. Now, what he said was, I'm going to, you know, keep an eye on them and make sure they're doing their jobs well. And if they're struggling or they're not doing things correctly, then I will take time out of my job and I will go over and I'll be like, hey, you got to do X, Y, and Z. Like, you're not doing this right. We got to prepare better for this, whatever, whatever, whatever. And when he's explaining this, Dibs, the only thing running through my head is that's what the last year had been. And maybe the last 2 years, even with Steve Wilks, he's had to take time and responsibility and brain power away from whatever he wants to do with his time to help out his assistant coaches and make sure they're doing their best job. And I think the difference that Robert Saleh makes is not that there's a lack of trust that Shanahan had with others, but you just have more of a belief that Robert Saleh will handle his business as good as he possibly can, and that's one less thing for Shanahan to worry about. And as a result, maybe he's able to fill his responsibilities as the head coach of the team a little bit better.
Yeah, and he had Nick Sorensen last year, who had never been a coordinator, yeah, and it was clear that the defense had taken a step back. And so, yeah, he had to utilize some of his time and his resources to worry about that. The special teams were a flat-out kind of a joke, a little bit of a laughing stock, where you had a kicker who couldn't make kicks and you had a long snapper who was getting into shouting matches with your wide receiver. You couldn't cover kickoffs and punts, and that unit was basically a hot mess. And so now you bring in not only Robert Saleh, but Gus Bradley as well, a guy who is a veteran in the league, and you feel like, okay, I don't even need to really worry about that room because Robert and Gus, they've got it on lock, and you've got position coaches who've been there as well. And so you feel like, even though it's a young defense, a lot of new players, a lot of drafted rookies who you're going to rely on in some way, you've got good coaches over there, so Shanahan can just lock in on trying to get the offense good.
I want to play this for you. I just explained it. I probably didn't do it justice. Kyle Shanahan on the TK show earlier this week, Kawakami asked Shanahan if Saleh can take on more responsibility this time around. Here's how Shanahan answered that question.
I give everyone full responsibility of their role. I'm going to hold them accountable and be a pain in the ass, but I give everyone full responsibility. And then I watch. And if it's not working, I change it. But if you micromanage that stuff, like, you're going to make someone else worse. I always wanted to do for head coaches what I hope they're doing for me. I want a head coach not to worry about me. When I have a head coach, like when I had Mike Pettine or Dan Quinn, and they're coming in and asking me a ton of questions, watching my meetings all the time, it makes me feel like I'm not doing my job because they shouldn't have to worry about it. They should know that I'm doing the offense as good as it's possible, and they should trust that. And that's what I believe with anyone I hire. And if I don't, I'm going to be on you a lot till we get it there. And once I can trust your how you are, how you think, how the film looks, how you talk to the players, thank you. Now I can be better for the Niners in other areas because you were the best man for that area. But it's always my responsibility to make sure everyone's doing it.
I can't help but hear that, Dibs, and think he's talking about what happened last year and how that might have hurt him because he said at the end, thank you, you're doing your job, now I can do what is best for the Niners elsewhere. And that might not have been the case last year, but it is going to be this year with Saleh back.
And maybe the year before too, right? Yeah. Where
partially,
I can honestly say I'm sort of built for this. And he comes out in the press conference after the Minnesota game and he's, you know, after the zero blitz at the end of the half. And
can't do that. He knows that.
He knows you can't do that. It's like you came out and you said that in a press conference. Clearly, you didn't feel like you had to monitor what was going on in the room. And then that happened and he's looking at it through his laminated play sheet, and he's like, what the absolute blank was that? He knows you can't do that. And then he probably spoke too openly to the media, but that clearly wasn't the first time that he was frustrated with what was going on. But now you get Robert Saleh back, and Saleh's got it. He's got the room. And Kyle's right. You don't ever want to have that feeling that your boss is micromanaging you. And, you know, our boss, Matt Nahegan, will come in occasionally during the break, and it's usually just to chop it up or offer his perspective on something. It's not a case where...
He can micromanage sometimes.
He can, but usually not during the show.
Yeah.
Like, he'll micromanage you outside of the show because he understands that if he does that during the show, now I'm going to be second-guessing what I'm doing and going to be looking in the other room to see if he's in there. And so, you know, he'll go into you guys and he might...
all the time.
And he might say to you guys, hey, get these guys back on track, and then you guys will have to get us back on track. Yeah. But, you know, to his credit, he won't come in here and do that same thing, and that's kind of what Kyle Shanahan's talking about.
Yeah, just while we're on in this area, one more Shanahan talking about having Saleh back, and he goes on to talk about the last two defensive coordinators and how maybe it wasn't quite fair, the situation that he threw them into. Here's Shanahan on having Saleh back.
He's a lot easier to deal with because all the things that I wrote him with, now he's come back and be like, I get it. I had to deal with some stuff as a head coach, and so that's fun to bond with him on those things. But I don't have much to say negative about the other guys, so it's that isn't hard for me. Like, when you lose a coordinator after an NFC championship or after a Super Bowl, it is hard to replace because all the options aren't out there. And when you have a really good defense, when that does happen, when you have really good position coaches and the continuity is there, you really want to replace from within. And we didn't have that our first year with Wilkes. I had to go outside. And I brought Wilkson, who's a hell of a coach. He's going to do a hell of a job in the Jets. It wasn't the right fit with where our defense was personnel-wise, just because that wasn't his scheme. It was too much for him to learn it from the other position coaches. I thought he could learn more of it by studying all of D'Amico's stuff, by studying Saleh's stuff. I record everything in here. My whole story was when my dad got hired here, he lived in that Marriott for 2 months, and all he did was watch film on Mike Holmgren and Bill
Walsh.
The
meetings, right? You're going
all the installs, so you can learn it and then go through it. And it was an unfair position to put him in. It just... We got to the Super Bowl, almost won it, but I didn't think it was right going forward. But that was nothing against him. I thought Nick was ready. He had been here long enough. He wasn't the year before. He had seen all this. And then Nick got his first opportunity, and he was thrown into a situation that I think was a little unfair for him, too. The expectations were so high, as they should have been, but we really weren't that defense.
Interesting from Shanahan. I mean, it kind of feels like each of his last two DC hires before Saleh bringing him back was just kind of like, well, we don't have any other choice, so let's try this. Hopefully it works.
Yeah.
And in both cases, it didn't really work.
Well, he thought that Steve could come in and learn it, and you know, he told the story about his dad like locking himself in a hotel room for 2 months to learn about the predecessor before him. And you know, Steve came in and didn't really apply what he brought with him to this scheme. And then, you know, Nick got thrown into it, and part of that was the defense wasn't as good. The personnel on the field last year wasn't as good. Mooney Ward missed games. You didn't have Greenlaw, and you had real trouble on the defensive line as well. Fred Warner played hurt, and Nick Sorensen was never able to get his footing.
Yeah, and as a result, he's now, I think, the special teams coordinator for the Cowboys.
That's correct.
No longer with the 49ers. Speaking of Robert Saleh, he did speak after practice today down in Santa Clara. A couple things that you're going to want to hear that he had to say. We'll get that to you next. Also, a little bit later on, we do have to tell you the latest in the Jonathan Kuminga situation. His agent has took to Twitter, or X, whatever you call it now. His agent tweeted yesterday. Plus, we have some fresh reporting, if you want to call it that, from Shams Charania and Anthony Slater. We'll let you know what those two had to say about this Kuminga situation and a whole lot more. All of that is coming up. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you. We're sponsored by Honda of Vallejo. More next on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. No Willard, it's Dibs and Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs. Talking Niners as they wrapped up day two of their training camp, second practice of training camp earlier today. Spending a lot of time on the defense. Dibs, just to get the idea of how much you value Robert Saleh, if you could have Robert Saleh and this defense, so the current situation for the Niners, or say, like, I mean, go back to Steve Wilkes and the defense of 2 years ago, or say it was Nick Sorensen in the defense of a couple of years ago, how big of an impact do you think the coordinator is, or is this just a good coordinator can take a good group of players and make them great, but you still got to have a good group of players in the first place. How much of an impact do you think Robert Saleh can have?
I think he can have a big impact because you have a young defense. And, you know, you look at D'Amico Ryans a couple of years ago when you were the number one defense in points allowed, the number one defense in yards allowed, and that defense was more of a veteran group in 2022. That was before D'Amico got the gig and went on to be the Houston Texans head coach. I think that this group, when you've got so many players who are going to be either third year, second year, or first year defensive players, I think then the coordinator, and it's not only the coordination sensation of a defense, so to speak, it's also the coaching. And this is where, thank you, camp becomes so important for this defense and for Robert Saleh and, you know, the rest of the coaching staff, where you've got young players who are still learning how to be NFL defensive players.
Speaking of that and how important it is this stage of the year to get acquainted with everybody and get used to everybody and see what everybody's capable of, Robert Saleh spoke today and he said, you know, there's going to be a gelling period. There will be a stretch of time where we just have to figure each other out. Here's Saleh.
Anytime you have that much turnover and that much change, there's going to be a process of gelling and getting to know one another. And again, just understanding the system and how you play together at a high level. But whether they're veterans or young, the expectation is that you get better throughout the course of the year, regardless. Whether you're a 10-year vet or a young rookie taking his first snap, you go to bed better than when you woke up every day of life. And that's so the expectation, regardless of how old we are, is to get better.
Mm. It's just good hearing his voice again,
yeah.
Isn't it,
Dibs? Yeah. Yeah.
I can already picture him screaming on the sideline, veins popping out of his neck and forehead when the Niners get a big third down stop and they get off the field. I can't wait to see that. But this brings me back to something that Kyle Shanahan was asked about, not on the TK show, but at the podium down in Santa Clara. And he was essentially asked, like, will you play young players, your rookies and second-year players, almost kind of no matter what? And I think the idea is kind of what Robert Saleh was talking about. Now, he said veterans and young players, but you would imagine the players that have the most room for growth are the youngsters that are relatively new to the NFL and are learning every single day out there. If you were to play, you know, Mykael Williams and Nick Martin and Upton Stout and Alfred Collins and all those rookies they drafted on defense, if you were to play all those dudes from week one on, Dibs, they're going to be loads better, say, in week 12 than they were when week one began. And it's partly why I think a lot of us fall into the easy schedule trap. Like, yeah, this is an easy schedule, and it helps the 49ers out. But just because you had an easy schedule and racked up 11 or 12 wins does not mean that you're some pushover team. Like, you also can improve as the weeks and as the season moves along. And that's what it feels like Saleh is talking about. There will be a period early where we're not as good, but you know that if we stick with it, then by the time the end of the season comes around, we're going to be an entirely different team.
And if you get into the playoffs, if you happen to go 11-6 and you're a playoff team, whether or not you're a wild card or division winner or whatever, and you played all those guys, Mykael Williams played, you know, 700 snaps. If he's able to play in most of the games and he's a rotational piece and all the rest of the guys, D. Winters, who will be making his real first impact as a defensive player. You know, he's played a lot of special teams and he's been a backup, but if you're going to start him and you look around the rest of Upton Stout?
Upton Stout, potential nickelback.
If he's your nickelback and then he plays 65% of the snaps and he plays a lot of football and they're growing pains and you're going to have mistakes and penalties and you get burned, you get beat, whatever it is, but you get to the end of the year and you're a playoff team, well, you're going to be better for it. And I'm just looking at the 2022 Niners defense.
Okay.
Talanoa Hufanga played 96% of the snaps, and he still was a mostly young player. And D'Amato Lenore played 82% of the snaps. And that team was also surrounded by Greenlaw and Bosa and Warner and Amenahu and Ebukam, guys who were more veteran. Jimmy Ward, Kerry Hyder, Eric Armstead, Azeez Al-Shaair. These are guys who had been around the league more. Now, this defense doesn't have that luxury. If you think about who the veterans are, Nick Bosa now a veteran. He'll be in, what, year 6, I think, or 6 or 7?
Rookie in 2019, so 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. This is his 7th year.
7th year already?
Yeah.
Wow, and Fred Warner is...
8th year.
Exactly. And so, you know, you've got Huff, and you mentioned he's more of a situational guy, but yeah. he is...
New to the system.
Right, but he's a veteran. He's also, a guy who's played football.
Also not new to Robert Saleh, I guess. New to the team, but right. maybe not new to the system.
And for me, it's more about new to the NFL.
Yeah.
And if you look around... All the guys they just drafted, they're brand new. And the second-year guys are mostly new, guys who didn't play a ton. Renardo Green, I think, has some chops because he played
a
bunch.
Great.
And, you know, Diamador Lenore now quietly is a bit of a veteran, but you don't have the same level of, like, 7, 8, 9-year defensive players, so... You're going to lean on Fred Warner and Nick Bosa and some of the other OGs.
Yeah, and this is what, let's see... where'd this come from? The 480. Oh, and this is from one of our favorites, Lori in Phoenix, who chimes in, Dibs, on the Boxer and Gerson Working Injury Attorneys text line. And this is exactly what we're talking about. I think the combination of young players and an easier schedule is advantageous. It gives the young guys a path to get their feet wet and get better by the end of the season. There's no doubt about it. And the 707, very similar, that just came in a couple of seconds ago. Again, on the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line. Breaking in young players on defense is not impossible. Look at Philly last year. Philly, I mean, you want to be amazed, and you want to know why Philly won the Super Bowl last year, and while they are destined to be really good for years to come, look at their last three drafts. And a lot of it is on the defensive side of the football and how great they have drafted. It's a very, very long shot to say right now that the Niners draft in April is good. We simply do not know. We will find out relatively soon. The first handful of weeks of the year is not going to make or break a single draft class, but we will get some returns coming up here pretty soon. But the easiest way, Dibs, to go from a competitive team to like the best team in the NFL, it's just hit on three picks in a single draft, and they all start, and they're all on cheap rookie deals, and then suddenly it becomes 100 times easier to build a roster together. So the 707 is exactly right in pointing out the Philadelphia Eagles, because that's exactly what they did last year, and it's why they were able to recover from a really rough back stretch of 2023 when the Niners kind of ended their season, if you remember, in the link in Philly.
Yep.
They ended up not even winning a playoff game after they were the number one seed through like December in the NFC, and then they didn't quite get it done. And the reason why they were able to bounce back and win the Super Bowl partially is because they hit on their draft picks and their rookies learned on the job to the point where Cooper DeJean, a rookie defensive back, had a pick six in the Super Bowl. Not that that is necessarily in the cards for the Niners, but if things go well, then that could be the kind of progression that you're looking at.
Absolutely, and you look at, you know, last year where you had all those rookies come in and make an impact, and it didn't lead to winning, but you found that you had 5 or 6 or even 7 players who are NFL guys, caliber, who could contribute. And so this year, you're leaning on that even more so on the defensive side of the ball, where you're expecting your linebacker Nick Martin to come in and not be a starter, but be a guy. Maybe when you go to a base defense and you have 3 linebackers, if he's out there and you can play him and rely on him, maybe he eventually starts over D Winners, whatever it is. You look at all of the defensive draft capital you used, you need those guys to come in this year and play and at least contribute. You don't have to all be stars. And just looking at the 2022 team and the defensive snap counts, you had a lot of different guys play 50, 60, 70% of the snaps. And I do think that you are looking at it the same way this year with so many young players.
Absolutely. And also on the text line of the Boxer and Gerson Work Injury Attorneys text line is on fire right now. The 925, this is a great point, and I 100% agree. The Rams and Eagles show why drafting well is key. The Eagles, we already touched on that. The Rams, absolutely as well. We talked about this yesterday, Dibs, when Shanahan was talking about how you never want to fully go all in and sell the farm. He said, you know, if you could guarantee a Super Bowl, then maybe. But the reality is you can't guarantee it. The Rams, though, they did that. They went all in. They put all of their chips into the middle. You screamed out as I was talking, F them picks, right? Like,
right,
they did
right.
That. And I think their owner or GM or whoever it was like wearing a shirt that said F them picks when they celebrated their Super Bowl with their parade. That was what they did. So how have the Rams, Dibs, been able to recover from going all in and not having a lot of draft picks? They had one good draft. One good draft. And it was last year. And suddenly, the reality for the Rams is, oh my God, we're right back to being able to compete. Now, they had Puka the year prior, but that was not a first-round pick. That was later on.
Fifth round,
obviously,
yeah.
That is kind of like a George Kittle kind of pick where you just a diamond in the rough. And that obviously helps. But specifically on their defense, they made two picks early in that draft. Braden Fisk and Jared Verse, both out of Florida State. It was Jared Verse was the 19th overall pick, Dibs, and he was the defensive rookie of the year.
Yep.
Like, Mykael Williams, the 11th overall pick, if he wins the defensive rookie of the year, Dibs, it's a very big ask. But that is what happened with the Rams, and suddenly they went from a spot of, oh my God, we're dead in the water, we've had no draft picks for years, how are we going to compete? They got Jared Verse and Braden Fisk, and now they're like, oh my God, our defense is set for the next 7 years.
Yeah, and they also got Blake Corum, the running back, who went to Michigan, and he actually had a really solid year, some special teams as well. And I'm just looking at their draft, and of the 10 players they drafted, 8 of them played in 15 or more games. So
last year's draft.
Correct.
Yeah.
And Jared Verse, their first-round pick, was their first-round pick since Jared Goff.
Wow.
They, in 2023, 22, 21, 20, 19, 18, and 17, did not have a first-round pick.
They said F them picks, and it got them a Super Bowl.
They literally did F them picks.
And literally, they're still in a spot where you go into this season, and the Niners and Rams are like neck and neck. If you look at the odds, oddsmakers think they have like an even shot to win the division.
Yeah. And I mean, if you look at what they did in later rounds, and they had Cooper Kupp, can't stop Cooper Kupp, third rounder in 2017, Joseph Noteboom, the tackle, third rounder in 18, and you got Cam Akers, the running back, Van Jefferson, a wide receiver, second rounders, and on it goes. Tutu Atwell, who killed the Niners last year.
Tutu.
Second round pick, Tutu Atwell, but your point is well made. Kyren Williams, a fifth rounder out of Notre Dame.
I think he's holding out right now.
A running back, but I mean, they got some contributions from him before that. So, yeah, the Ram modality is not the norm. And so for the 49ers, they're trying to do the same thing this year, which is you drafted almost all defense. And yeah, you said it, Jared Verse and Braden Fisk, back-to-back defensive linemen, first two picks. The Niners used 5 picks in a row this year on defense, and they're hoping to do what the Rams did.
Yeah, I mean, that is the goal. That's the equation. It's all right. I mean, the Niners coming from a relatively similar spot as the Rams. The Rams had the Super Bowl. The Niners didn't. The Niners traded away 3 first-round picks for Trey Lance, and once the Trey Lance pick happened, they did not have first-round picks for a bit. They got them back, and now they're trying to pull off a Rams draft, an Eagles draft, what have you, and you hit on a couple of players, and suddenly your odds just turn around immediately. So, obviously, so much of it is going to rest on how Mykael Williams plays and how Alfred Collins plays and Nick Martin and all those guys defensively. And if you don't really know much about them just yet, don't worry. You're not supposed to. You're just going to have to fingers crossed and hope that it works out. And if it does, then the Niners will be really good once again. If it doesn't, then the defense is likely going to struggle just a little bit because they're going to have to rely on those guys so much. Let's go out to the phone lines. 888-957-9570. Austin is in the city and wants to weigh in. Austin, what's up? You're on with Dibs and Grandy.
Hey, no, man. What's up, you guys, man? How y'all doing?
Doing good, man.
Hey, look, this is what I want to say. Hey, I like where the Niners are at. Just for the fans not knowing coming into the season where we're going to be standing at. It's about time to pass the torch to the rookies. Just like OKC, I mean, it's not basketball, but these youngsters, they want the finals. It's about time for us to I like where we at with the team, with the offense. It's not one person you can key on now. So this is a big season for Brock. He gets to throw the ball around to everyone, you know, and nobody knows who's going to get the ball. Go get the rock this year. Just go out and ball out. I like where we at.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Austin. I mean, he is right that it's a big year for Brock. I mean, he got paid a gigantic amount in the offseason. the attention kind of just shifts to the quarterback. All right, you better be good enough, Brock. We'll see.
Right, and just maybe not as good as he was 2 years ago, but better than last year. And a lot of it, for me, stems from his supporting cast. And if you have your supporting cast healthy and you're able to have a defense that will help you, he's got a better chance to succeed. The Niners, more so than maybe any other team that I can think of, they rely on complementary football, which is the defense complementing the offense and vice versa. The defense able to get off the field and give the Niners the ball, and the Niners offense able to control the time of possession and keep the defense off the field. Long drives, run the ball, win time of possession. That, for me, is more important for the Niners than almost any other team.
Wow. Sorry, Dibs, I was a little distracted because we just got some news from the NFL.
Okay.
This comes from the Raiders. The Raiders are releasing standout defensive tackle Christian Wilkins, the former prize of free agency last year. A year ago, he signed a 5-year, $110 million deal, and the Niners are releasing him. He's been dealing with a serious foot injury and is on the books for $57.5 million fully guaranteed, yet the Raiders releasing him, and now he suddenly gets added to a pool of free agents that, of course, is pretty slim at this point in the year. Who knows what his foot injury is looking like right now. But that's a big piece and a really good player who's been good for a while, mostly on the Dolphins in his career. But interesting what the Raiders just did there. Again, they're releasing Christian Wilkins just 1 year into a 5-year, $110 million deal.
It's just a bad organization is what that is. That, to me, reeks of dysfunctionality, where you've got a player who is making that much money, and whether it's due to injury or ineffectiveness, whatever it is, and you're going to go ahead and eat that much money and just send Christian Watkins out into the great blue yonder, that is a sign for me of a franchise that is kind of broken from the inside. And the Niners might be facing a similar decision with Brandon Ayuk after this year or next year if things don't get better. But in general, the Niners aren't a franchise that makes a lot of those types of decisions.
It does seem like the Raiders, and I guess this is an official, the Raiders voided the remaining guarantees on Wilkins' contract, but Wilkins has filed a grievance with the NFLPA. Adam Schefter of ESPN is citing how Wilkins treated the rehab from his foot injury as a result of the way in which he went about rehab. The Raiders are attempting to void the rest of the contract, the rest of the guarantees, but Wilkins has filed a grievance with the NFLPA. Regardless, even if the Raiders don't have to pay a single more dollar of the guarantee, this is still a disaster. You signed a guy to a 5-year deal last offseason, and a year later he's gone. And at this stage of the offseason, you don't have a way to go out and try to find a replacement.
No, I mean, there is no replacement out there, right?
No, you got to turn to your young guys. Whoever you were hoping to back him up has got to be your starter now.
Yeah, I'm just looking at a post-June 1st release, and the dead cap is almost $18 million this year, $29.7 next year. So it's basically a $47.5 million dead cap eat, and you do save $212,000 this year, which is kind of nice, but the overall dead cap hit is a humongous amount of money. Yeah, according to SpotTrack, $47.7 million in dead cap over the course of the next 2 years, and he's able to go out there and get another job.
Does voiding the deal impact those numbers at all? Because the Raiders are attempting to void the deal. They're trying to say he didn't attack rehab of his foot in a way that upholds whatever language is in the contract, so the contract is now voided. That would wipe all that off, wouldn't it?
I would bet that if they were able to void it, if they were able to prove, and this would have to head to some sort of arbitration, probably not regular court.
Wilkins filed a grievance to the NFLPA, so it's going to all figure itself out eventually.
Would you? But I mean, for $47.7 million?
Oh, of course.
You know, and he was guaranteed $57.5 million at signing. That was the guaranteed at signing. I get that no matter what. And so the Raiders are now going to try to look at him not doing his work to try to get better as a reason to void the deal. That, I mean, maybe he didn't do any of the work. I don't know what the situation is, but again, I see this from the outside, and I look at an organization that is not going about things in a very successful and professional manner.
Yeah. You brought up the term the dead cap hit, and you're looking at his contract. We got a text that just came in on the Boxer and Gerson work injury attorney's text line from the 510. Can you explain what the dead cap is, like I'm a 10-year-old? The way that I understand it, Dibs, is the dead cap hit for a player is a number that is charged against a team's salary cap for a player that is no longer on the roster.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. So if the salary cap is $250 million, and you have a dead cap hit of $47 million over 2 years, well, $28 million of that will be charged to you next year. So your $250 million salary cap is really $222 million, because $28 million of your allocated money that you can spend is being spent on a guy who's not around.
Yeah, and just to further look this up to give you the fully correct answer, a salary cap charge incurred by a team for a player who is no longer on the roster, either due to release or trade, but still has remaining guaranteed money or prorated bonuses associated with their contract. It's not actual cash being paid to the player at that moment, but rather a way to account for money already paid or guaranteed in their contract that is not yet fully counted against the cap. Like, Deebo Samuel, no longer on the Niners roster, has a dead cap number for the Niners this year, because they signed him to that deal originally.
Right.
Yeah.
Even though he's now in Washington, they still have that as a part of what they have to carry. It's pretty standard for teams to have some dead cap money, but when you sign a guy to a long-term deal and after 1 year you release him and then you have to eat a portion of that contract, it's just not good business.
Yeah, no, it's not. But Christian Wilkins released by the Raiders, and they're trying to get out of that contract entirely. Wilkins, I mean, in his career has been really good, has played a lot of games. Originally a Miami Dolphin, played 5 years there. Last year, first year as a Raider, only played 5 years, had that foot injury. And apparently the Raiders trying to say that he did not, for whatever reason, don't know the specifics, did not rehab his foot in the right way, did not put the effort in, yada, yada, yada. And as a result, they're trying to get that contract voided. But we will see how it plays out. And if he's added into the free agency market, which he will be upon release, I wonder if the Niners have any interest in him, or if there are rights starting potentially a couple of rookies in the middle of their defensive line. We shall see. But yeah, even if Dibs, the Raiders don't owe another penny of that deal, that's rough. That is rough, because he was supposed to be a key piece of that Raider defense for years to come. And he's 29 years old, getting on the other side of his prime, but you still viewed him as a piece for you for at least a couple more years.
Yeah, I mean, you signed him to $110 million over four, so at the time, which was before last year, you thought that he was going to be a cornerstone along with Max Crosby on that defense, and it took 1 year and an injury and maybe a rehab that you didn't love the way he was going about attacking it, and now you're willing to release him and eat that money over the course of the next couple of years because you want him gone that badly. And not only that, you want to avoid the deal as well. So clearly there's more to it than just, you know, it didn't work out, we're going to go ahead and waive you.
Yeah.
The Raiders feel some type of way about how he went about getting better.
Absolutely. All right, time for a break. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you. Talking a lot about the Niners so far, but there are some new things we got to get into relating to Jonathan Kuminga and the Warriors. We'll tell you everything you need to know about that. That's what we're getting into when we come back. It's Willard and Dibs, Dibs and Grandy with you on 95.7 The Game.